next case is 99-1883, City of Ohio versus Larry Goff.
Right. the fact that he was unworthy of the benefit of showing the evidence earlier. In my case, the affidavit not only stated the fact that the witness was recanted for the first time in testimony, but actually alleged the evidence innocent. Now, in this case, the defendant submitted absolutely no evidence to the trial court, including that he was unavoidably prevented from serving as evidence earlier. Now, as the appellate court mentioned, there is no question there was delay in this case. The only question was whether it was unavoidable or not.
So on that factual issue, it's your position that this case is not in conflict with Wright?
Well, actually, there are two separate issues. In the Wright case, on its pleadings, the defendant actually submitted the fact that there was unavoidable delay. So it automatically got to the second step, whether this was new evidence, and therefore, whether it was warranted. Now, this is different from Wright because
I understood your explanation. My question still remains the same. Then the two cases aren't in conflict.
I don't think they are.
Did you ask to certify it here?
No, I did not.
So, in fact, it could very well be dismissed on the basis of improvidently allowed because there's no conflict, because it's really a factual situation, isn't it? What you allege, if you're going to argue the two-step process.
Actually, yes, and the conflict arises between the two cases and the way the appellate district had reasoned how Rule 33 is to be applied, whether there is a hearing that is required for both steps in the procedure or if there is a hearing that is required for the one in the second step, as the Ninth District decided. Now, the fact that a hearing is not meaningful.
Why is that not a conflict? If two districts view it differently, the law differently, the application of Rule 33, isn't that exactly why we take a conflict case and decide which application is the proper one?
Well, that is a conflict. However, the second district did not decide it that way with a two-step procedure. They, in fact, decided it just on the basis of a one-step procedure. It wasn't very clear. And also, there's a conflict between the cases. They're not similar in the fact that in the Wright case, the defendant filed a motion for a new trial, whereas in this case, the defendant filed a motion for leave to move on your trial, which was filed later than the 120 days after the verdict was rendered. So there's a conflict of facts as well.
The defendant confirms that he wasn't going to
move on.
The advocacy needs to talk to the defendant that now would be different there.
Circumstantially, the evidence was present to the jury, which claims the defendant has seen, and this other evidence with some of the ballistic evidence, some of the other evidence on that. That's correct. And that's a question, whether this is new evidence or not, that's a question that perhaps is for hearing. But that threshold level, why this wasn't surfaced before then, the defendant offered absolutely no evidence. Why? And this was somebody who was co-defendant with them, he never mentioned the fact that he might have asked the defendant or he had the opportunity to, beforehand, obviously, to strike this person who was associated with this person for some time. And they're both tried together. They're both available as witnesses at the time.
And then also the trial, he told the attorney story A, and after the trial, he told the attorney the second story A, and for sentencing, he told, still denied involvement, and it wasn't until 6 years later he changed his mind. Why doesn't that try to let the
it establishes the delay. It just doesn't establish the fact that it was unavoidable, that the fact that the defendant was uncommitted from removing his evidence.
So he should have put in his affidavit, I called him every week for 6 years to see if he changed his mind. Is that what he was looking for? And what, how could he prove that this guy would have or should have changed his mind sooner?
Well, for example, in the White case, the witness actually said that for the first time, admitting the fact that he was recanting his testimony. Now that establishes something that the witness for the first time in recanting his testimony. The co-defendant in this case does not establish the fact that for the first time he was saying that his co-defendant was not involved in this crime.
Certainly implied by his affidavit. He may not have said, now for the first time I'm changing my story, just get story A, which is where it's going to be story B. Draw a pretty strong inference that that's when he changed his story.
And once again, this does not provide any new evidence because it's still the same evidence, just simply corroborates what the defendant or the appellant in this case has said all along, which is the fact that he wasn't in the shooting, but he was placed with our circumstantial evidence. Now, even though a hearing is not mandated from Rule 33, it is also, because to show the exact procedure required by that rule, Rules 47 and 57B actually invest the trial court with discretion to rule on the pleadings without having a formal hearing. If the court would now create a hearing for each step of the two-step process in Rule 33, it would create by judicial order in Rule 33 a process, making Rules 44 and 57B, deadline of law. Now, if the court was to look at the holding in the Ryan case and the ruling in the Ryan case in one step procedure at the beginning, then the trial would still exercise its own discretion. Now, in order to bring a motion for a new trial based on newly discovered evidence, the defendant must be able to demonstrate that all evidence does more than merely impeach or contradict former evidence. The new trial would have to show strong probability of a different result in order to grant a motion for a new trial. And in this case, the defendant fails to present any evidence which would create a strong probability of a different result. In addition to that, the very same witnesses that the defendant is were also available at the original trial. Therefore, the defendant's motion is also brought up without the rest of the trial. First of the court, a motion for a new trial should be carefully scrutinized and cautious of granted, especially when it is premised on evidence obtained 6 years after the original trial. Now, there's obvious concerns of judicial economy, especially when memories fade and witnesses disappear. But the discretion it begins the trial court by the parole rules is due in part to the fact that the trial court is familiar with the details of the case and the results of having presided over the original trial. Now, this discretion provides that the trial court may reject on its pleadings a defendant's motion for leave to file a motion for a new trial based on new evidence when it fails to establish an avoidable delay. Members of the court, the state respectfully submits that the trial court made no error prejudicial to the defendant and asks that the judgment of the trial court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marshall. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.